All right, now we are here. I am Patrick with Evan Weston and Jeffrey Taylor to talk about WWE's Hell in a Cell, available on the WWE Network. Let's go ahead and get to it. And let's start with the main event of the evening, which I think was probably the longest match I've seen in 2017 in the WWE. Hell in a Cell match, false count anywhere, Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens. Fellas, let's start with you, Evan. Your thoughts on this main event here?
I have a few. I believe you are correct, Patrick, that this was the longest match of the year that was not the Royal Rumble match. That would be the only other one that would meet the 39 minutes that Shane and Kevin destroyed each other for. There were kind of two matches in one here. The first match I thought was pretty weak. The first 10 to 15 minutes or so, where they did that little part, you know, where Shane attacked him outside the cell, and then, but once they got inside the cage, you know, they just kind of worked a regular match. And it was weird. And this has been a routine pattern with Kevin Owens, where when he gets in one of these big brawls, they have him build up to the big stunts by, you know, doing his heel heat segment. And it's not what I want to see. I don't know if it's on him or if it's on the agent. I don't know who to blame there. But I just kept sitting there thinking, grab a chair. You know, grab a table. Let's go. Because and it has nothing to do with me just being a mark for that kind of stuff. It's because that's what we were promised. The feud building, you know, the TV was, you know, Kevin Owens made Shane's geriatric father, you know, don't come and kill me, Vince McMahon, bleed from the forehead and said that, you know, his kids would have been better off if he died. You know, once you say something like that, you don't start working hold, you know? So I thought that was kind of weird. I thought the match really picked up when Owens did that running senton and missed and smashed through the table. And then Shane, in the most ingenious thing I think I've ever seen in a Hell in a Cell match, excepting the one that happened earlier in the night, which we will get to, Shane grabs a piece of the table and starts wailing on Kevin Owens with it. And that was like, all right, yeah, that's what I wanted to see. You take that broken fucking table and you kick his ass with it. And I was all the way in on Shane. And then, of course, they got outside the cage, which you knew they were going to do with the false count anywhere stipulation. And by the time they got on the top of it, I was freaking out. I don't even know. You know, when people throw out like star ratings and, you know, trying to objectively quantify a match, you know, I doubt that Dave Meltzer will really like this match. But to me, people being up on the cage like that, I was viscerally, you know, screaming at the TV, don't die. I was so scared. Every time Owens took a bump, I was freaking out. And you know what? I think there's something to that, that the match made me feel something. And I, at the same time, I wanted Shane to win. I was sucked into the story. I wanted the babyface to win the match. And of course, Shane ends up doing the big stunt. And I love that Owens didn't. And they teased it and he didn't. And I'm a big believer in the heel not giving the crowd what they want, which is another thing I think Owens does way too often. And to his credit, he didn't really do that in this match. You know, the babyface should be the one that does the big stunt. And the story of the match boiled down to, you know, Owens, all he does is talk, and he talks and talks and talks and talks this big game. And excuse me, at the end of the day, he wasn't brave enough to go as far as he needed to go to win the match. And Shane was. And this is notably the first time that they've protected Shane in a loss since he came back. They didn't protect him against The Undertaker. And they didn't protect him against AJ Styles. You know, Patrick, you know, and I have gotten into this over the last few months. I don't really think they view Kevin Owens as a main event level talent. And this was another indication of that in terms of main eventing big shows and being a top push star. Now, that said, I thought the finishing angle was brilliant. I did find it predictable. They foreshadowed it a lot. I know a lot of other people were shocked by it, so I'm glad that it worked. I think more of the audience it worked for as a surprise than not. It was not a surprise for me that Sammy did that. They've clearly been foreshadowing a story of him being, you know, disgruntled. And they did the whole thing right after SummerSlam where Owens wanted him to be the ref for his match with AJ, and Sammy considered it and turned it down. And then they had the match a couple of weeks ago, and then Shane blew him off when he was trying to warn him about Kevin Owens last week. And so this was, you know, if they were going to protect Shane McMahon, and I thought they were going to, this was the only way that they could do it. And so I thought they executed it really well. Sammy was maybe a touch late getting to the table, but there was no way to hide him. So I'm not really going to, it's a nitpick. I don't really care about that. He sold it brilliantly. I love that they made Sammy force all the doctors away so that Owens could get the pin. It really, really made you hate what he was doing. And it was a brilliant angle. And I am very, very excited to see Sting and Erico together in the WWE. They have not been together in the WWE yet. And we got really exciting times coming. So they had a great closing angle. They had a viscerally involving match. I doubt it will hold up nearly as well not watching it live, knowing that they don't die. But it was better than I expected. We got the great car wreck that I was hoping for. So thumbs up.
Jeffrey, your thoughts here on the main event.
Whoa, this main event was something special for me. Like you said, it was one of the longest matches of the year. I didn't know that, but it's definitely the second longest cell match, if I'm not mistaken, behind HBK and Triple H. But
yeah, the less we say about that one, the better.
So the match started off on the outside, which I really enjoyed. You know, giving you that taste of that Hell in a Cell on the outside, opposed to the first match that started. Shane came out with a full head of steam. I appreciated that because, like you said, Shane was upset what you did to his father, what you said about his kids, like, you know, all that picked up aggression was going down. Shane is looking like a superstar more than the actual roster. You know, he has these signature moves like the shooting star press and the coast to coast, which is funny because it's kind of like, why can't the regular roster have that type of build? And it says some of them do, but Shane really has it down pat. And I was just questioning my people, do you think that Shane is like a legit legend now? It's kind of like, does this cement his spot officially, in my opinion? Like,
that's he is a legit legend. Shane McMahon is awesome.
Like, this was really like, it blew me away in a sense. If Kurt Angle and Shane didn't blow me away over a decade ago, this really blew me away once again. Like you said, I want to touch on that half table. It reminded me of the WCW NWO Revenge. I don't know if you ever played that on the 64, but that half table that you grab from the crowd and you just start attacking your opponents on the game, it just brought back so many memories that you don't see that unless you have the Nasty Boys or Public Enemy. Like, you don't get that. And like you said, Shane was upset. Like, he's going to do whatever it takes to destroy Kevin Owens. So I appreciated that. The referee break of the rope break for Kevin Owens was – I was annoyed with that. But I love how Corey Graves saved it on commentary, talking about caught up in a moment because of so many emotions. I just
– Yeah, that was dumb.
Like that. But I was like – I'm not going to spare the referee. I was over him. Like, I feel like he's a veteran. He made a vetting this pay-per-view. Like, come on now. Like, this falls count anywhere. The bolt cutters, I was wondering what they were doing in the Hell in a Cell. But like we said, we all knew they were trying to get out somehow. You know, it was just one of those question marks. Like, where did they come from? But them on top of the cell, I want to hit on that a little bit, is that it was cringeworthy for me. Like, I barely watched majority of what they were doing in the top because one bad move and – you know, we're prepared for the worst. So my eyes was covered for the last thing. Even that pop-up powerbomb on the top, I thought they was...
Oh, that was the worst one. That was the worst one. I lost it.
It was cringe right there. It was. I was nervous up there. Like, but I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I feel like they spent majority of the match on the top, to be honest. Like, I was kind of, oh, are they going to go down at all? Like, they were up there for a good minute. And I appreciated that. That was something that you don't get too much. So I think Cactus Jack and Triple H did it for a good minute. But Sami Zayn, Wow. Of course, I saw it. The moment I realized that this was going to happen was when Shane attacked, like, indirectly Sami Zayn on SmackDown with the chair.
Yep, that's what it hit for me, too. That's what it hit for me, too.
Oh, he's going to get some revenge. So it wasn't a surprise for me, but it still evoked emotion from me. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. A lot of people are excited that they're together. I think that this is similar to what Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens had going last year. It's kind of like you love to see two heavyweights. Well, for me, I love seeing two heavyweights come together like a two-man power trip kind of deal. So I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do moving forward, to be honest. But it was an excellent match. Like, it was the main event. It was well-deserved. Like, it was the cap off to the show. For me, I really enjoyed Shane's performance. Like, it was all Shane. I give a little credit to Kevin Owens, but this was the Shane show. Shane showed out for this one.
I think that we can all agree that the Hell in a Cell gimmick is now Shane's match. Once a year, that's what he's going to do. You're going to put him in Hell in a Cell. It's just what's going to happen. I loved the match for the most part. I would have enjoyed this match if it had just gone 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, it could have been shorter. They could have cut out the first 10 minutes, though. They didn't have to do that. Seriously, that was the weakest part of the match. They wasted their time. And the pay-per-view was already going over 3 hours. I don't know why they had to do that.
Totally. It's kind of like you don't need to see wrestling because, A, that's going to expose Shane for the fact that, you know, he's not a professional wrestler. And you just want to see a bunch of big spots and crazy stuff. That's what I expect, especially when you put Hell in a Cell. Yeah, the step on the top, you know, I was afraid that they were going to try to do a spot from the top of the cage and go through the cage for a hot minute there, but glad they didn't do it.
I had a quick question before we moved on any further. I heard you hint at, Patrick, that you said Shane McMahon really isn't a professional wrestler. Like, what makes a professional wrestler? Because
listen,
I was questioning that.
Jeffrey, you're the man, because I was going to say the same thing. We need to stop pretending that Shane McMahon isn't an all-time great. I don't care if he's formally trained. I don't care. What has the man done in 2017? He opened WrestleMania with AJ Styles and had the best wrestling match on the card. They barely did any stunts. They did the one trash can spot that you have to do, and they got the ref bump. And other than that, the dude caught a phenomenal forearm into a triangle choke, smoother than anyone else I've ever seen do it, including Shinsuke Nakamura at Wrestle Kingdom. And then he goes and has this car crash match, totally different type of match, with Kevin Owens, and crushes it. Why are we doubting him anymore? I want to see him work every show. Get him out there.
Let me explain to you what I mean when I say a pro wrestler, okay? Don't get all worked up over me saying he's not a pro wrestler. He is the definition of sports entertainment. He is one of the best sports entertainment, but as far as technically sound pro wrestler, he is not.
Who cares?
I'm just stating a fact. Calm down.
I'm trying to embrace debate here, ma'am. I'm kidding. I'm not calling you out. But it's become a meme that, you know, oh, how are they going to make Shane McMahon credible enough to wrestle AJ Styles? Or how are we going to believe Shane McMahon against Kevin Owens? One, Shane McMahon actually knows how to fight. He would probably kick Kevin Owens' ass if they had a real fight. Number two, why does he have to be a wrestler? Why can't you buy the story that they're presenting you? Shane McMahon has been a protected gatekeeper character who has had competitive matches with top stars his entire career. You know, he had a competitive match with Kurt Angle all the way in 2001. He was Randy Orton's, heater for WrestleMania in 2009, and he took just as much offense in that match as Randy Orton did when Randy Orton was as hot as he's ever been. So I don't want to hear that you know, Shane McMahon is not credible. The guy went 30 minutes with The Undertaker, for God's sake. The match was awful, but he did it. And it wasn't his fault, as we found out this year, that The Undertaker was in no position to be in the ring. So I think the guy is great. There's going to be a lot of whining and moaning this year about why is Shane McMahon getting a match at WrestleMania, and I don't know who he's going to work, but you know, maybe they'll do something out of this Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn thing. Maybe they bring Triple H in. Who knows? But I want to see Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. Are you kidding me? Why wouldn't you? We get to see everybody else every other, you know, every week of the year. I want to see Shane McMahon at WrestleMania. I want to see Shane McMahon jumping off shit. And I want to see Shane McMahon catching springboard moves into triangle chokes because he's awesome. And he was not the reason that I wasn't excited for this match. I'll put it at that.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying that he's not great at what he does. And I'm not trying to say that he shouldn't be wrestling. I'm just saying he's not technically sound. But hey, I love Shane McMahon in the match as much as you do. I have no problem. I'm not one of those naysayers saying those things about Shane. It's just there's a difference between him being a technically sound pro wrestler and him being a sports entertainer.
I get what you're saying.
Not only do I love Shane McMahon, I expected this match to be the main event. I'm not sure if that was announced ever or not.
No, I thought it was pretty clear going in. They were on the poster and all the advertising. I think that Jinder and Nakamura not being in the cell was kind of the key to why this was going to be the main event.
Yeah, there was no doubt about it.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, Patrick. I was just prodding you a little bit. But I do think that we need to come to realize that Shane McMahon, is he going to work a 20-minute Matt Classic? No, but he also kind of did this year. So the guy rocks. I don't, you know, you feel about the McMahons, you know, politically, personally, however you might want, you know, that would be a completely different podcast. But if you want to talk about Shane McMahon as a performer, I think, you know, as far as, like you said, Patrick, a sports entertainer, there aren't a whole bunch better and not a whole bunch I'd rather watch on big events more.
And another thing on the Shane McMahon point is, you know, everybody talks about Roman Reigns taking the Undertaker spot. Well, the one spot that Shane took from the Undertaker is going to be that WrestleMania spot. The part-timer that comes in WrestleMania and does his big spot.
I think that's going to be John Cena. I think John Cena is going to be the once-a-year Undertaker-like WrestleMania match.
Oh, yeah, I see what you all are saying now.
Yeah, I think Patrick means is the once a year, you know, guest spot where, you know, you're not in the title match, but you're in the Undertaker match. I think that's good. I think that's going to be Cena. I think he's only going to work once a year in a couple years. I think it's going to be Cena.
But until then, you have Shane McMahon to basically be in the middle.
You have Triple H, who is going to insist on working until he's 80.
For sure.
You have Lesnar, so yeah, there's a few guys, but Shane is definitely one of them.
Goldberg,
no question.
Isn't Goldberg doing one more match as well? Isn't Goldberg doing? Man, one
more? I haven't heard that. I would love to see them. I would love to see them bring him in to face Braun. Oh man, but we're getting off topic.
So I thought all the spots with going from the top of the cage to the tables were great. You know, I always wonder how Shane is going to top everything that he does, especially because he's had the Hell in a Cell match before and all that. But he finds innovative ways to make it work and make it be different and exciting at the same time. So I really loved it. Again, I would have loved it to be 15 to 20 minutes less. But I have no gripes about it. The way that it worked. Now, everything needs to make sense for me. I'm a kind of person where, like, I pay attention to what's happening. I just want it to make sense as to why it's happening. And this was used for multiple purposes. First, and the best one is Sami Zayn. Him being involved. Yeah, the timing may have been off. You know, and you know, you can see that even before Sami got to Kevin, you know, he was already pulling himself up at the table. But outside of those kind of little things, the fact that, boom, you now have that turn, now the whole attention is going to be on those two. It's going to elevate them and Sammy really needs that. So if putting the McMahons, if involving the McMahons will elevate Sammy, I'm all for it. I love it. And I can't wait to see the duo as heels. Sammy, I think, will be perfect with Owens. Of course, I mean, they're real life best friends, so it's natural. I loved it, though. I loved it. It was probably my favorite match of the night. It was definitely my favorite match of the night. I enjoyed the heck of everything.
I'm curious to see what they're going to do with Zayn and Owens as heels. And it's why I predicted New Day would win the tag team championship match, because I thought they were going to put Zayn and Owens against the New Day if they did team them up. But the Usos are champions, so I'm not sure where that goes, although I don't care what their alignments are. I'll watch the hell out of Zayn and Owens against the Usos. But, you know, I think Shane is going to want revenge. Could we get Triple H and Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn down the line? We'll see.
They said, with Talking Smack, AJ Styles won in. Would you let AJ
Styles? Yeah. I didn't know if that – I couldn't tell if that was, like, them actually having him say that, or if it was just, you know, a little, you know, AJ just, you know, saying something unscripted that isn't going to go anywhere. But if they did AJ and Shane against Zayn and Owens, I think that'd be incredible.
I mean, look, at this point, you put yourself in a match in there, you insert yourself in there, then you're in a main event type of match. And, you know, all the TV time you're going to get. And then, heck, if it means not having to work with Baron Corbin or Ty Dillinger, yeah, why not?
Hey. Hey, now.
That was a good match.
Well, we'll get to it.
Last very thing, because, Evan, I know you love stats. If I am correct, and oh, boy, if I'm not, but I believe that now Kevin Owens is 2-0 in Hell in a Cell matches.
Yes, he is. And both times he had a Canadian help him win the match. So there you go. Kevin Owens, help from a fellow Canadian to win Hell in a Cell matches.
If anything, we can say Kevin Owens is consistent. All right, so let's go back to the beginning and the first Hell in a Cell match of the evening. Now, I originally predicted two title changes to happening on this show. And I was correcting that, except for it was the wrong two titles.
So you got everything wrong.
Absolutely. But we get New Day versus the Usos. And Xavier apparently is good enough to wrestle.
Oh.
Well, because he was injured. His leg was injured, Jeffrey. Come on, I'm not trying to do...
Oh, I thought that was a shot.
No, he's not. Why would you take a shot? Xavier's awesome. Xavier was the best guy in the match.
No, that's what I'm saying. I took a selfie with him at Dragon Con last month.
Patrick outing himself as an even bigger nerd than someone who hosts a wrestling podcast.
So here, I really thought that knew they were going to retain, but, you know, they did not. The Usos won. You know, I really enjoyed this match as well. I thought that they used the Cell properly, especially that my favorite spot was when they had one of the Usos, because I still can't tell them apart, and they locked him in a corner with all those candlesticks.
That was Jay.
There you go. All right. Thank you. I love that. And then the other spot was when the Usos had Xavier on the turnbuckle.
The Randy Orton John Cena tribute spot.
Yeah, with the handcuffs, and they were just going to town on that chest and ribs.
That's from my favorite match in wrestling history. That spot. Yeah, the I Quit match between John Cena and Randy Orton is my favorite match of all time. We can talk about that some other time. But yes, that spot was directly lifted from the John Cena-Randy Orton I Quit match.
I love the heck out of this. This was fun. I was into it the whole time. I do think that they putting the titles on the Usos, you know, thinking back, was the right call, because you look at the teams that SmackDown has on its roster, they're all mostly baby faces.
They're, well, oh, you know what? They can do Gable and Benjamin.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing. You're totally right. Yep, that's what they're doing. Oh, that's going to be exactly. sick.
Exactly.
That's
I'm excited.
Sick.
I'm excited.
Hell yeah to that.
So, yeah, they have them. Then there's also Breezango. They're going to get a title shot at some point.
You think?
They already got one.
They'll get another one. Little Fashion Files things is kind of getting them a little over. It's going to...
No, I love them.
Look, I'm just saying, there's more babyface teams than there are heel teams, so...
Well, Gable and Benjamin is the obvious feud. I think that's going to be sweet.
Yes.
All right.
So, okay, your thoughts here on the tag team title match.
This was my favorite match of the night. I don't have to question it whatsoever. This is the match where I really just stopped live tweeting the show. And it was like the kickoff show, and New Day and the Usos are now notorious for opening up a show and, you know, just stealing it off the bat for me. Some of my favorite spots was the Big E spear. That was crazy to me. Like, I was like hoping Big E was okay, but it looked like it was like forceful and aggressive along with the
community. Dude, I knew they were going to do the spear, and I was cringing waiting for it because I knew it's his big spot, and I knew he was going to smash his head into the cage, and I was so scared.
Yeah, that was another moment where you have to just hope everything is not going to turn out like Austin and Owen. But the trombones was very comedic with they had a purple one, a blue one. Like, that was funny. Like, the creativity with, like, the weapons, that was like, real funny. This is awesome chance was well-deserved, as always. Like, these guys, like you said, the kendo spot. I really thought the match was over after the double super kicks and double splash by the Usos, but the Xavier Woods breaking it up, you know, it just made me stand up out of my seat. You know, moments like that is what I appreciated. I think that I was one of the few that did expect the title change, and that was because the Usos was always talking about the penitentiary or something. And it just
penitentiary.
Penitentiary. It just made sense for them to take the titles in the penitentiary. Like, it wouldn't have been right if they did it.
Yeah, that's a good call. Because now you can do – well, no, seriously, because now you can do it with them again. And you can say, you know, it's the Usos Penitentiary. We win in Hell in a Cell. I like that.
It would have been stupid if they didn't win it.
No, you're right. Yeah, it's their match, absolutely. Yeah, I'm even going to take it a step further. Not only was this my favorite match of the night, this is one of my three favorite matches of the year. I thought this was – yeah, this was everything – that you want in pro wrestling. It had light moments with the, you know, the comedy that the New Day do. You had, you know, really creative, inventive spots. How hard is it with 5 hours of TV a week? How hard is it? And that's not even counting NXT and 205 and all that stuff. And pay-per-views twice a month to actually see something genuinely new and original in this company. In professional wrestling, you know, in movies, Hollywood makes the same five movies over and over again, TV shows, whatever. You know, it's so hard to find anything truly original. And that's what this match was. There was, you know, I mentioned that they did lift the handcuff spot, but it's not something that they do often. And it was a great tribute. The kendo stick spot in the corner that you mentioned, some of the offense that this whole feud has involved. Xavier going for that cross ring elbow drop at Battleground and then getting super kicked on the way down was, the alley oosh at SummerSlam, where one Uso threw Woods into a Samoa drop to the other one on the outside. And then some of the stuff in this match. Oh, my goodness gracious. You had brilliant drama down the stretch. How about Xavier Woods? What a fiery babyface performance by both Xavier and Big E. But God, yes. they were heroic. Xavier did a couple of fighting spirit spots. And it was, you know, I hate those spots typically. And I got so fired up for him. I wanted Xavier to win this match so badly. And the whole story built up to this beautiful moment. And you know, Big E out there protecting his boy. And Kofi just grabbing on the cage, helpless to watch. It felt like the cell actually, for one of the few times in the PG era where a cell match felt like it belonged. It was brutal. It was violent. The villains were evil. The heroes were heroic and valiant. And it was everything that you want in a pro wrestling match, all in 22 perfect minutes. 5 stars, match of the year candidate, best main roster tag team match. Jesus Christ. I'll give you best main roster tag team match since Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit against Steve Austin and Triple H in May 2001. That's how long it's been since the, and this is the best tag team feud in the history of the World Wrestling Federation in the ring. It is that good. And no, WWF was not ever really a tag team fed. So I guess that's a little damning with faint praise, but I don't take it that way because this was awesome. I will watch these matches back forever. I think they surpassed what DIY and the Revival did last year. This was everything you could possibly want. I cannot recommend this match highly enough. It was so much fun and so dramatic. And I wasn't even thinking about it critically as I was watching it. It just sucked me in. Bravo to all four guys and Kofi too, who did a great job on the outside. And especially the MVP of the match was Xavier Woods, who I thought had one of the great performances of the year. If not longer, really something incredible to watch. We were very, very privileged to get to watch those guys have that match last night.
Now, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but when it's all said and done, can people call the New Day the greatest tag team ever in WWE history?
No, but you can call the Usos that.
They're up there.
I would put the Usos ahead of the New Day. The Usos have been around longer. They've had better matches with more different opponents. The stuff that they had done, from a variety of different feuds to the stuff that they did with the Shield, back in 2013 when the Shield were red hot heels. They were basically with the Wyatt family, had incredible matches with Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. The stuff they did with Gallows and Anderson last year, backing up Roman Reigns against the Club, was crazy. Just carrying the tag team division and getting great stuff out of it. The stuff they did with Goldust and Stardust, when it seemed like WWE couldn't possibly care less about tag team wrestling, the Usos were there. And this character change has been just the unlocking of the Usos to the masses. I love it. I absolutely love it. I want them to have great tag team matches with everybody forever, and they're great. I don't know that I would put them number one. Probably not. But man, they're in the top five for me, really. I think it's who else? Is there a version of the Hart Foundation that's better? Maybe. The Rockers, Edge and Christian, the best of the Hardys, but to me, they're on that level.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I was alluding to as well, is that a lot of times right now, I like that Evan is like appreciating the talent and the things that we're getting, because a lot of people don't do that. We wait till, 10 years later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good. But it's kind of like, it's really great to acknowledge that these are some of the best, especially the Usos, like you said, and this was one of the best matches that I've ever seen. To be honest, I've seen a lot of matches. But one thing that I did want to touch on before we left off on this is that a lot of people is kind of like keep cliffhanging, like wanting to go on to something new with the New Day and the Usos in a sense of what's next. I think that they can run this out to the end of the year. I mean, Survivor Series is coming up. And if the Usos and the New Day are like on the same team, if they do Raw versus SmackDown, that's going to be interesting, to be honest. Or even if they have, God forbid, teams against each other. But I think that they can do something for Survivor Series, to be honest.
They could do an Iron Man match for their last one. They could do an Iron Man match if they wanted to. They were billing this as the final showdown throughout the advertising for this. Mm-hmm. Are we really going to complain if we get more New Day Usos matches? No.
But this
did feel like the end. This felt like the end to me. And then I think maybe Gable and Benjamin, I would really like to see them get a shot to tear down the house with the Usos, because I think they'd have great matches.
Yeah, I think that the tag team division is definitely it's very bright right now, and I can't wait to see what the next few programs are. You know, if this is the end for these two guys, these two teams for now, I'll be excited to see what happens with New Day. Jeffrey alluded kind of like maybe another Raw versus SmackDown, because this is Survivor Series is another joint pay-per-view, so.
Yeah, well, they haven't really announced what they're doing yet. We might get our first inkling of that tomorrow night. But I don't know if they're going to do the Raw versus SmackDown stuff again. I thought it really worked last year. I don't know what they're going to do this year. Brock Lesnar is advertised for the show, so I think there will probably be a Universal title match. Does that mean that, you know, what they used to do was they'd have, you know, both world titles defended, and then there'd be a 5-on-5 from each show. You know, are they going to do that, or are they going to do the – see, I kind of liked it because it was like the WWE All-Star game, you know? It was, you know, the best of each roster going up against each other. It was cool, and I'd love to see that again, especially with the Shield back together. What if the Shield have to team up with Braun, you know? Like, I'd love that. But yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. But with New Day, maybe they're the guys who go up against Zayn and Owens. Would you object to New Day versus Zayn and Owens matches? I wouldn't.
No, I would not either. I would definitely enjoy the heck out of that.
Yeah, so, I mean, whatever they – and you know what? The great thing about New Day is I put the Usos over them as an in-ring tag team, Patrick, but they are an all-time great WWE act in terms of the whole package. You know, the promos, the merchandise, the feel of it, the gimmick, the matches themselves are very good. They are right up there, you know, as a stable with any of the heavyweights, in my opinion. Heels, faces, they're great.
I agree, 100%.
And with that, let's go ahead and move on to the next match I wanted to highlight right now. And that is the WWE Championship, Nakamura and Jinder Mahal. I felt like it wasn't anything different from the first match that they had. I wish this match had the Cell. I think this would have been perfect for the Cell.
Here's the thing, though. If it has the Cell, one, it would have been twice as long, and God forbid we have to watch that.
Yeah, and no Cell.
And two, it would have meant Jinder can't win, because it would have meant the Singh brothers would not be inside the Cell, or they would have gotten in the Cell, making it pointless. I'm so frustrated
maybe,
by this.
Maybe
I'm Great so Kali frustrated.
Could have came back though. Maybe Great Kali could have came back.
How funny was that they brought him back for one night to end a feud and then didn't bring him back again?
Maybe he could have broke off the cell door or something.
I'm coughing. This is ridiculous. This is so frustrating to me. And I've been on this podcast, and I was ready to give Jinder a shot, and Patrick was too. We were both fairly positive on it at first. And I think a lot of that was and he'll never get the credit he deserves for this. But I've been preaching it on the show for months that Randy Orton deserves a lot of credit for getting Jinder Mahal over as a legitimate main eventer and just going bumping his ass off to get Jinder over. Because now that he's in there with Nakamura, who is not in there to get Jinder over, but is in there to get himself over as well, Jinder has become exposed. The guy works one match. This is not just me saying it. He does. He works one match. They have, you know, the opening back and forth. There's a heel heat segment where he works on top for about 6 to 8 minutes. The Singhs interfere, and then we go to the finish. And that's it. It's the one match that he knows how to work. And Orton got it over because Orton has so, you know, Orton's moveset is super over, and he's got that physical charisma that – you know, he's a known commodity, but Shinsuke, you know, physical charisma, of course he's off the charts, but he's not a known commodity with this crowd. They haven't bought in. And I don't think he's been positioned all that well to have them buy in. So, you know, it's the same shit every week. And they dipped into the gutter with this racist stuff. And I know the counter argument to this is he's a heel. You're supposed to want him to lose. You're supposed to not like him. But here's my question. I don't want to watch it. His matches bore me. I want him not to – I want him to be champion. I want him to not be champion, not because I want to see him lose the way I wanted to see Kevin Owens lose in the main event. I want him not to be champion so that I can have championship matches that I want to see. Does that make sense? Like, yes. I it's not even that I want him to go away, because I think there's value in the act, and I think the Singh brothers are great, but he isn't, it's not a main event act. It's not, it is not a WWE title act. It just isn't. I wanted it to be, I was ready to, because I liked that they were doing something new. I said this earlier about being original. I liked that they were doing something new, and I liked that they were elevating a person of color into that spot. I thought that was great, but God damn it. I can't, you know what? And it's so transparent too. You know, here's what's going to happen. They're going to have him be champion in India. The India tour is December 8th and 9th. The next SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view is December 17th. And I bet you a lot of money right now that Shinsuke Nakamura wins a WWE championship on that show. And the problem wasn't even that Jinder was champion for the India tour. If you want to, you know, that's a market with what, 1.3 billion people is the number they say. You know, if you want to make money in that market, more power to you. But why'd you put the title on him in May? You know, why not do it now if you want to pop a house and tank your TV for the whole summer? And I know that the numbers didn't really get that much worse than they would have anyway. I know that no one superstar can really affect the business the way it used to. The brand is the star. I get all that. And we're also not the intended audience for Jinder. I there's a lot that goes into this, but the fact is he doesn't feel like a main eventer, and his matches are boring and his matches are the same, and I'm ready for it to end. And Nakamura has not done himself any favors. I thought their SummerSlam match was a disaster. I thought this was actually a good bit better. Nakamura looked a good bit better than the SummerSlam match. I thought this was mediocre. I thought it was average. I gave it, I think, 2.5 stars, whereas I thought the SummerSlam match was actively bad. However, mediocre is not good enough for the WWE Championship match, right? It shouldn't be. Exactly. You know, and ever since they gave the title to Bray Wyatt, it has just been exhausting to watch the SmackDown main event. And it's why Jinder has not been the main event for so long, because they don't believe in him that way. You know, they've been, you know, first it was AJ for the US title, then Money in the Bank went on top of him, then he went under Lesnar, and now he's under Shane and Owens. You know, Owens, the guy, all he's done is lose for the last 4 months, and he's main eventing and getting the cell match. And Jinder, who all he does is win, is in a mid-card title match for the WWE Championship. Oof. You know, and I get that the WWE title is just a prop, but it's a valuable prop. It's a prop you can use to tell some really great stories. And the stories that you tell with Jinder, there's only one. And it's very frustrating to see it go this long. So I think there's a scenario too where he might hold the title all the way to Mania. And I don't see it. I think it exists because the character of Jinder Mahal appears to exist, like so many have before, to lose to John Cena. I said this before, and I think John Cena 17 might come at WrestleMania 34 against Jinder Mahal. I hope that I love John Cena. It has nothing to do with him, but Jinder being champion until Mania would be bad news. And I think if he has to have it through the India tour, whatever. Shinsuke Nakamura, please let him walk out of Clash of Champions on December 17th with the WWE title, please. And I understand that this argument doesn't matter and it's not going to affect business and we're all going to watch anyway, but I want it to be better. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, it totally makes sense. It's funny that you mentioned that, because they were like promoting Jinder a Tea Time champion, like in the blogs and everything. They're kind of like, they're promoting Jinder as a Tea Time champion. So it's funny that you said until like WrestleMania. It's kind of like, what if they take a little break and he gets it back? Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
No, and listen, once he loses the title, he's not going away. You know, he's not. They didn't put all this work into him for him to just, you know, go back into obscurity. He will be an upper mid card character for the foreseeable future. You know, he's going to be, you know, would it shock you if he drops the title? Say he does drop the title to Nakamura in December. If he, you know, maybe gets into the U.S. title picture or goes to Raw and is one of Roman Reigns' first challengers after WrestleMania, you know, I could easily see them using him that way. And I'm sure the guy works hard. He looks great. I'm not going to, you know, and people assume about steroids and stuff. I'm not going to assume anything about him. He clearly follows an extremely strict regimen. I love how hard he works. He works hard in his matches, but you know, at least try something different. Try taking him out of his comfort zone and letting him work something different, you know? Just if it has to happen, then make it better. You know, the business argument aside, I don't really care about that. It's not my money. Make it better.
It feels like with Jinder Mahal, he's all hype and he's all entertaining before the bell rings and after the bell rings. And I just don't see a lot of something different in his matches. And I thought, you know, okay, you know, there's been a lot of talk about also Nakamura and his style in adapting to the WWE style. When two guys kind of need help and can't really help each other, it doesn't come out well. And then if you're not going to give Nakamura the belt, I think they should have just not done any of this. They could have put anybody else in the spot against Jinder, to be honest, for the last two pay-per-views.
That's a completely separate discussion. How do they view Nakamura, right? Because, you know, it seemed at first that they viewed him as someone you could build a brand around, which I was like, all right, let's give this a shot. I would build SmackDown around AJ Styles as my babyface champion. But if you want to go with Nakamura in that role, I wouldn't have had a problem. You know, they built up a whole pay-per-view advertising around his debut match. They put him, you know, they put him over Cena. They put him over Orton. You don't just get to do that, you know? And yet, he basically lost clean Sunday night, didn't he?
100%.
I mean, well, not 100%, but 85%, you know, because the Singh brothers got ejected and then Nakamura lost, right? I mean, they were playing up all the controversy and all. So that tells me that it's not over, but he did lose, you know, he lost the match and I don't know. And that's why I'm thinking to myself, man, you know, AJ Styles is free now. Maybe he's the next victim. And then they go to Cena. I can't you see it? It's frustrating. It's why I was so down on SmackDown going into this show and why I'm still a little worried coming out of it, despite how much I liked the rest of this show. All right, go ahead, Jeffrey. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, you're fine. I seen AJ Styles. I don't know if they did it on television, but I've seen AJ Styles work with Jinder Mahal live in person at some house shows, and it was just still the same style of show, but it's because it's AJ. So it was kind of like it was more exciting and everything, so I definitely wouldn't mind a program with that. But
okay,
yeah, I'm just honestly, I'm ready to move on from Jinder just like I am from this title reign. So it's kind of like yep. Draining. I went with Nakamura for the win tonight. So
draining is a great word. Draining is a great word to describe it. No, that's you nailed it. That is the perfect word. It's very frustrating, no doubt about it.
Is this how they felt with Sergeant Slaughter, or was it different? Like,
well, yeah, no, because that rah-rah, you know, America thing, you know, it's still out there. I mean, look who the president is, but it's not. I don't think it's as prevalent as it was, you know, look at the controversy around the NFL right now. You know, there's a real debate going on in this country about the role of patriotism. And you know, but the thing is, you know, Jinder, you know, first the whole deal was, you know, you don't like me because you hate brown people, you know, and the whole, of course it was, we don't like you because you're an asshole, which Randy Orton said, that was fine. But then when he started, you know, going after, you know, Shinsuke for being Japanese, You know, well, then, you know, there's the whole even, you know, I'm a justified heel thing falls away. And I thought that was tasteless anyway. I don't think that there's any place on a family show. And at the end of the day, you got to remember WWE is for kids first. We are talking right now in the middle of the night over the phone about a kids show. but yes, the, you know, it is a family show. I didn't think that had any place on it. But at the same time, you know, it's just there's nothing left there for me to grasp onto. It's just an empty title reign that exists to sell tickets to two arena shows in a country all the way around the world. And I don't get any of the money that WWE makes from selling those tickets. So while I can understand that it's a business decision, I don't care. You know, it's not my money. You know, you do whatever you need to do for your business. I want to watch good wrestling. And I like the WWE because I think for the most part, they put on a good television show. And I think they get a bum rap because people like to bitch. But this title reign has been a flop and it's time for it to end. So praying on December, we'll hope for that. But I think you might have to strap yourself in all the way to Mania. Not again, not that this match was even that bad. It was much better than SummerSlam, but it was the same thing. It was so, I talked about original. There was nothing original in this, nothing.
Exactly, and that's where I was going. It's like this match just it felt like a match, something, just a placeholder. Like you could have put this before the main event and I would have just like, whatever. Because it just wasn't exciting. It wasn't anything. It was just a match. And it sucks that for the WWE Championship and with a star like Nakamura and with everything that they've done to make gender a big deal. And like you said earlier, Evan, we were both, you know, on the hype train there. It's that hype train is like now a minibus or a minivan. Because it's just we're losing steam here. I don't know how much longer I can deal with Jinder Mahal as champion, but there's still that December tour, and I said it before, you know, he doesn't need to be a champion to be a star when he goes to India. But
that's a good point. WWE,
they'll probably let him have the belt.
Well, he's probably is he even going to defend it again? Before then, because you got Survivor Series where there's a 50-50 shot he's in a tag match.
Right. So exactly, there's a lot of pause. Most likely he'll be in some type of match in between now and Survivor Series because when there's a huge gap like this.
That's true. There's so much TV. Yeah.
They usually do some big matches on SmackDown Live, which.
Yeah, you're right. He's not going to lose the title on SmackDown Live though. You could theoretically have AJ Styles beat him at the Rumble and have Nakamura win the Rumble if you wanted to go that route. But I don't think they do. So,
what's the likeliness that Nakamura does win it in December?
I would still put that at slightly better than even money that Nakamura does win the title in December. I don't think they spent all this effort and give, you know, they don't give away clean John Cena wins cheaply. They don't give away clean Randy Orton wins cheaply. I don't think you spend that much time on Nakamura unless he was going to win the belt. I would still, if you put a gun to my head and asked, I would say, yes, Nakamura is going to win the title at Clash, but I don't know for sure. And so, you know, but here's the thing. If you ask the company, they would say, well, aren't you going to really want to watch Clash of Champions now? And I would say, no, I would want to wake up in the morning and go on Twitter and see if Jinder lost the belt. I'll watch it for the podcast because I love Patrick Alvarez and I want to make him happy. But damn, if I'm just blown out on this title reign, we've talked about it enough. This was a good show. I don't want to be negative, but yeah, I would still say slightly better than 50%. I will also say that if he doesn't lose it on that show, I think he's holding it all the way to WrestleMania. I think that's our last chance to see it come off of him.
You know, we're going to have to wait and see. If it's going to happen, it's going to have to happen sooner than later. something's had to happen before people start losing their interest in Shinsuke Nakamura. He came in as such a big deal, and if they lose anything that they've had and been building up since, it would be a shame. It would just be a total shame.
I think you're right.
Everything that they've invested in Shinsuke. I mean, they made NXT Shinsuke's house for a long time. And he sold and continues to sell a lot of merch. And for people to just turn on him and not care, that would be the suckiest thing in the world.
I think you're right. I think you kill him if he doesn't win. If he gets another shot and loses, I think he's dead.
I agree.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to another title match that I predicted and didn't happen. But close. Charlotte Flair defeats Natalya by disqualification. I thought that was a perfect ending. I thought it was great. I probably think this was their second or third best match of these two. And I'm happy that they kept Natalya as the champion, because I like to see her in a little bit longer run. But I definitely think she's losing the belt to Charlotte at some point. But for 12 plus minutes that this had, and by the way, this match was longer than the WWE Championship match, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, I didn't expect Natalya to keep the belt, but I like it.
Here's the thing about this. SmackDown Live is running a house show the Saturday after Survivor Series in Greensboro, North Carolina. And they have branded it WWE Starcade. I don't know if y'all have seen this.
Yes.
So advertised on that card is Natalya versus Charlotte Flair for the women's title in a steel cage. Ric Flair, of course, famously won the NWA world title from Harley Race in a steel cage match at Starcade 1983. Now, how great a moment is it if Charlotte Flair does a crossbody off the top rope to pin Natalya and win the SmackDown Women's Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina, in a steel cage at Starcade, and have the I Ain't Dead Yet Ric Flair come out from the back to congratulate her and stand tall in the middle of the ring?
Is it going to be on the network?
Right now, it hasn't been announced as such, but they would be dumb not to at this point.
I think what's happened is right now it is a house show. I think what might happen is if they sell it out, they may put it on the network. They were not selling tickets for the hard camera side like they normally wouldn't for a TV. So I assume it will at least be taped. I don't know that it will air live, but they've also switched the title on a house show this year. They put the U.S. title on AJ Styles at Madison Square Garden. So I think there's that seems to be the ending to this is, you know, and they did a good job. If that is indeed the plan, and I think it is, they did a good job setting it up. I thought that Charlotte sold the chair shots to the knee really, really well. I don't mind them using Rick's recent scare in the storyline, because knowing what the family has been through and knowing what they've gone through in the last few months makes me root for Charlotte. And there was no other hook for that. But because I thought Charlotte was a brilliant heel. I didn't want her to, you know, to be a face. I thought it was a weird decision when they did it. But now I'm on board. So this is kind of the opposite deal, where I want Natalya to lose to Charlotte and I want to see it happen. You know, this is a heel who did something really despicable, and I'm not a big Natalya fan, but they booked her really well here. I thought the finish worked. I thought the match they worked was, you know, it was fine. But they were clearly holding back a little bit, and we know that they have better matches in them. I think the alignment is right for this. And I think that Charlotte is going to prove people wrong. And she's already proved me wrong, in my opinion, that she can work as a babyface. I'm hoping that they do air that Starcade and that they go with that, because I think it would be a really nice moment.
I agree with everything. In a sense of this match was definitely lackluster for me. Like I said, I've seen their peak, in my opinion. So I was kind of like, I just wanted them to take it there. But what I did appreciate about it, because I'm a positive person, is that I know it's going to set up to that. It's kind of like you can't give them all that at this moment. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, you're going to give me this at Hell in a Cell. I know you guys got more. I appreciate it. Charlotte, the storytelling of it, like I said, what it's setting up to be in terms of the left knee, left leg, and then attacking it with the chair. Natalya, not really thinking that she's not going to win, but she was just over it, in my opinion. Like Corey said, she was tired of fighting. She knew that if she got disqualified, she had the championship advantage. So I love when wrestlers do that at times. But what I wanted, and I'm a little depressed, I originally wanted Charlotte to win the title and Carmella to cash it in. So it seems like now that kind of I don't want that to happen at Starrcade. I don't want Carmella to rule.
I don't think they would do it there. I do think Carmella will cash in probably before the Royal Rumble. But you know, I think maybe at the next pay per view, at that December pay per view, they could do that. It's coming. It's coming. Don't you worry.
I feel like it would get some heat though. Now that you like brought up this sympathy story all the way up to.
Oh God, wouldn't it?
Ruin the moment. Like I feel
wouldn't
like
it? What, and can I you imagine
that it would be Carmella and Charlotte going at it? So I feel like, you know, I love Natalya and I hate to disarray her title reign already because I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying her. She deserves it. But I think she broke Trish Stratus' record. That was on the internet as well in terms of most wrestled pay-per-views. So I'm really happy for everything she's accomplished. But I'm ready for Carmella and this Money in the Bank and Charlotte and ruining Starrcade now. So I can't wait to see what else they have.
Well, they'd have to put it on the network if they were going to do that, right?
Yeah, so I'm really Carmella needs a moment too. She needs another moment,
and I feel like she does. Funny. Well, she's got this kink gimmick going on with James Ellsworth now. Like I don't know, is that PG? Can that really be on the show?
It depends on where they're going with it. You know, he's like not necessarily a kinky kind of way, more like a you're my pet kind of way, and I need to keep you in check.
Look at Patrick, that's funny.
Are you kidding me, dude?
Like my pet.
Patrick, are you 12? Come on.
No, but you just said we are talking about a kids show, right?
It's not exactly thinly veiled subtext, though. They kissed on one episode, and on the following episode, she was dragging him around on a leash. It's pretty clear to me what's going on here.
WWE has a history of just dismissing things, so I'm hoping that this is one of the things that it just goes away. Like, it just disappears one day.
We'll see. I don't really get Natalya's appeal the way that you do. I don't think she does very much particularly well. Like, she's kind of bland. You know, I really liked Naomi as champion, and I was kind of disappointed that they took the belt off of her. But I like this moment for Charlotte. Charlotte is clearly the one they view as the star. So, you know, whatever. Make her interesting. She's interesting to me right now. So I'm all in going forward. I thought she did a great job selling the chair shots to the knee. I thought she really, really made me believe that, and that made me want to see more. So I thought, you know, was the match great? No. But it was good enough for what the angle wanted.
Yeah, it was for a story, in my opinion.
It was good enough. All right.
And as far as Starrcade, you know, being airing on the network, I do want to remind people, you know, that the original Roadblock was going to be a house show that ended up being on the network. That was headlined by Triple H and Dean Ambrose, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Guess who had a match on that show? Natalya and Charlotte.
That's right. They had one of their first big matches on network specials on that one. So we'll see, but I definitely hope it's on the network. If not, it's going to make tons of footage out there. There'll be lots of it out there, so it'll be fun to watch.
Yes, I'm sure we will see it somehow, you know.
I'm going to be 30 minutes away.
Dude, you should go. Go to Starrcade.
I would first need to sell my WrestleCade ticket, but I'm considering it.
Go to WrestleCade.
I thought that the Rock and Roll Express and the Good Brothers were supposed to be wrestling.
Yeah. Yep. They're working a match. Yep.
The Good Brothers and the Rock and Roll Express are working on that show.
Okay, they're working on the
Matt Hardy's. Matt Hardy's going to work the show. Because Matt Hardy's got to work a show in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Although there's a Jinder Nakamura cage match on that show too. So.
Oh yeah, I just Googled to be honest. I'm interested.
So moving on. Next we have Baron Corbin defeating AJ Styles and Ty Dillinger in a triple threat match for the U.S. Championship. So apparently this happened in the pre-show or something, because, you know, I didn't watch the pre-show.
It was right at the beginning of the pre-show, I think. I was told, I saw it on Twitter, I was told on the, I saw it on Twitter, but yeah, it happened like right at the beginning of the pre-show.
If this means that Styles didn't have to take the loss against Corbin, I'm all for it. Ty Dillinger served a purpose on Sunday. That's all I have to say. AJ Styles was great. Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger were passable.
It was weird. They built on TV to a triple threat, and then it was going to be a singles match. It was such a letdown. I was like, I'd much rather see a triple threat match. You know, AJ's great in those matches. And you know, Corbin is, you know, that gives him, there's another person for him to work off of. He doesn't have to do too much. It was in the story. Dillinger pinned Corbin on the SmackDown before the show. Why would Corbin get a title shot over him? And so they fixed that. And, you know, they put Ty into the match. And as soon as they did it, I said, oh, wow, AJ's losing the title. And they did what you'd expect. They did exactly what you'd expect. Corbin would profit off of Styles' hard work to pin Dillinger. They consistently, you know, Styles has kind of drifted down into the mid card since he turned face after WrestleMania, but they consistently protect him. He doesn't eat clean pins in singles matches or anything like that. They find ways to get him over. He was put over pretty strong over Kevin Owens. And I think that he will be back into the main event picture sooner than later. So this was a good way to get this title off of him and get him back to that, you know, top star level. He still gets the biggest reactions on the show by far. He's their number three merchandise seller in the entire company behind John Cena and Roman Reigns. He has the most items available for sale on the WWE shop. He is a big ticket star, and it's time for him to move on up. As for the match itself, they got a ton of time. They got almost 20 minutes, if you can believe it. I don't know if they needed all of it, but I thought it was really good. I thought they did a lot of good stuff within a triple threat formula, and Styles in particular. This was his best performance since the match against Shane McMahon. I felt that in this run, he was, I don't want to say he was like not trying, because I know that's not true, but he was coasting a little bit on his, you know, his appeal and how over he is. And, you know, he and Kevin Owens just did not have chemistry. I don't know what it was, but, you know, sometimes two guys just don't work that well together. They just didn't. They didn't ever get off the ground. They didn't ever have what I thought to be much better than an above average match. I thought at the Battleground pay-per-view, they had one of the worst heatless pay-per-view matches of the year with a botched finish. Yeah, it was a complete mess. Yeah, they got the finish wrong. Come on. And so
wasn't good either.
No, it wasn't. It was all right. It wasn't great. You're right. They didn't have any chemistry, and it was nice to see AJ again in an environment that played to his strengths, you know, taking just the one bump he took. I think Corbin like threw him into the bottom of the turnbuckle or the post from inside the ring, and he launched off his back, and he has a way of contorting his body to make it look like he's in so much pain. I don't know how he does it, but it's such a convincing sell, and I love watching it, because, you know, and then he's such a great, they really have him working like a John Cena style babyface, and I thought he did a great job in that role. Dillinger, I know Patrick doesn't like him because Patrick is joyless. I thought he was great. And Baron looked good as the big heel. And if they got the finish right. So thumbs way up for this. This was better than it had any right to be going in. Adding Dillinger to the match, getting the finish right, and having a really fun, long, but fun match.
Nothing but agreements in that, to be honest. I really, really, really enjoyed this matchup. Like I said, I think a lot of people, when they saw Ty Dillinger move up, like, why is he here? Like, similar to Nakamura, it's kind of like, why was this guy so popular in NXT and everything? So it's kind of like, I feel like this was the match where Dillinger got to show himself a little bit. I feel like they had to have fun. Like, this is what I can do. Like, hey, mom and dad, this is what I can do, is what Dillinger was doing. And Baron Corbin, for some reason, just stepped it up for me. Like, he was all over the place in this match, throwing Styles around, like, making everything look good. And Styles was leading the matchup as the veteran. There was a spot with the Styles clash being reversed, which I was just going crazy watching. I was kind of like, wow, this takes some athleticism right here, what Dillinger and AJ Styles are doing with this sequence. But this was a really enjoyable matchup. I feel like this is a great way to bow AJ out of the scene, as you all said. I feel like he's done his due with the mid-card. He's left it. It's kind of similar to what Flair did with the United States title back in 96. It's kind of like he did a little moment with it, and then he went right back to the heavyweight. I feel like AJ just did that. And Baron Corbin, it's his time now. It's kind of like, what can he do with the mid-card title? You know, he kind of stole one and is really not stealing one, but it's his now. So I feel like he can have fun with Dillinger or some others, but I feel like this match definitely needs the triple threat aspect. Like, if it was one-on-one with Baron Corbin, like, that wouldn't have been good for any of us, that one-on-one matchup. So I was pleased with it all around.
It's not even that AJ and Corbin would have had a bad match, but if you wanted the title off of Styles, then, you know, you'd have to pin him in that scenario, which you can't do after you joked Corbin out with him losing the briefcase, right? So they kind of got out of the corner they put themselves in with this. So
you have to protect the star.
Yeah, totally. And AJ is a star and Corbin is not.
I think that this is the first time I'm taking Baron Corbin serious since that incident.
Yeah.
This is what tonight did for me.
Well, I thought that the feud kind of dragged AJ down a little bit, because it's like, you know, he just beat Owens. Now Owens, because even though he lost, gets elevated to a big main event, and AJ's here working the number five match on the card, you know. But this kind of rectified some of that for me. So we'll see what they do with AJ from here. I'm reading on Cage Side right now their rumor roundup thing, which isn't all that reliable, but they sometimes know. It seems that they may be planning a Team Shane versus Team Owens Survivor Series match for the SmackDown side, and then I'm guessing Raw would be Team Shield versus Team Braun of some sort. So if they were to do that, I guess maybe it's Shane, AJ, Knock, Rude, Orton against Owens, Zayn, Jinder, Rusev, Dolph, maybe?
That's assuming you want to do a five people. I mean, they could always do just three on three.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be that many guys. But you know, something like that. And then Cage Side says that AJ would then be Jinder's next challenger, which I can totally see happening. So we'll see.
I would rather them, like, put the New Day and the Usos with that, to be honest. Like, in a sense of, yeah, it's very heated. It's very intense. Everything is personal between everybody.
Totally.
Why not keep it all personal opposed to, like, adding travelers like Ziggler and Rude
or to give it to it? Who knows if that'll happen, but that's the latest rumor.
Yeah, they never listen to me.
All right, so let's go ahead and get the last two matches here. Randy Orton defeats Rusev in a little bit of under 12 minutes.
It wasn't a bad match for me. I actually enjoyed it, especially, like, I'm all about storytelling. It's kind of like at the SummerSlam, I was appalled. I was upset. I was ranting about it. Then the Rusev day happened in 9 seconds, which is hilarious to me. And then this match, I feel like this is the match that people wanted at SummerSlam, and they got it at Hell in a Cell a few months later. But I enjoyed the last few sequences and reversals between Randy Orton. Randy Orton looked good in that ring to me. So I enjoyed it. I feel like Rusev looked good as well in terms of where they want him to go in the future. I don't know what they're doing with him, but he can go somewhere after this match.
You know, they were in a tough spot, right? Because they're right after that incredible New Day versus Usos Hell in a Cell match that opened the show and stole it, like you said. And they just, they totally died. You know, I was out of breath I had to watch this again today. I watched the show live last night. I had to watch this again today just to have a review of it because I couldn't pay attention. And I was, yeah, I was still coming down from the Hell in a Cell match. So I on second watch, this was actually of the other like mid card bouts, other than the US title match, the two Hell in a Cell matches, of the other, you know, one on one mid card matches, including the Mahal match, I thought this was the best of those four matches. I thought it was really well worked. Let's give a specific shout out to the finish of Randy Orton getting caught in the RKO taunt for the accolade. And then slipping out of it to hit the RKO anyway. That was awesome. That was really
cool.
That was beautiful.
That was a really, really cool finish. I've always been a big Randy Orton fan. I think he's a great, great wrestler. I think Rusev is a funny character. I don't really take him seriously. I don't think he works as a serious main eventer. But he's good at what he does. I think the right guy won. And I think that there's money in Orton turning heel and moving up the card. I also wouldn't be surprised if they use him with Corbin if they want to keep him as a babyface. But I think Randy Orton kind of belongs as a heel. I think he kind of belongs as a heel, and I think he could have some pretty good matches with Nakamura and AJ if they wanted to go that route, and Bobby Roode. But this worked for me. Again, you struggle to think of where the two will go from here, but this was a good match put in an impossible situation. And they did the best they could with the hand that they were given.
Match placement is everything.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that this match, for the place that it got, it was still a good match. And I don't think that anybody really was expecting this to be a huge match of the night contender, especially with its placement. So I thought the guys worked well, and I enjoyed the match. You know, I felt like, you know, watching it was enjoyable and good, and like I said, that finished, I really enjoyed. And yeah, I'm with you, Evan. I think that a heel Randy Orton right now on SmackDown Live would be great. I'd love to see some type of turn sooner than later. And I think 2018, the Viper can really get going against some of these baby faces on the SmackDown roster, because you know what? As much as people could say one thing or another, but I think that they really need big, strong heels on SmackDown Live.
Yeah, it's the problem with the show right now. It's what we were talking about last month, right, Patrick? That the heels on this show are just weak. And I think Owens and Zayn together is a great heel act, which they've been missing. Jinder is not. So I think a third one in Orton would help. Or Roode, if they wanted to go that way.
Eventually, I think they'll get there. But for now, I like Roode where he's at.
I can't stand Roode as a face.
So Roode versus Ziggler.
I thought this was the least successful thing on the show. I didn't care for this at all. This is actually, you know, the WWE title match is what it is. This was what really disappointed me, because this came right after. And, you know, when you put this match together, the idea is you got to you're rolling out Bobby Roode, right? You got to feature him. The theme song essentially turned him face. I loved him in NXT. I thought him as the, you know who he was? He was a classic, you know, late 70s into the 80s NWA touring heel champion, right? Obviously, there's a lot of flair in the gimmick, but you know, there was some Harley Race to it. There was some heel Terry Funk to it. You know, it was a very, you know, he doesn't cheat necessarily. It's just he's conniving. He's, you know, he's deceptive. He plays possum. He pretends to be hurt to get the ref to, you know, be out of position, you know, just that, those little really annoying Southern heel ticks. And I thought he did them so well. I think he's had by far Nakamura's best two matches this year at their two takeover matches. I thought they were both brilliant. And I thought there was a lot in him as a Triple H style heel champion on the main roster. And they're going with him as a face because the theme song is going to get him cheered. It is so essential to him, and it's much fun to sing along with. I saw Roode live at the NXT taping at University of Central Florida. which is only about a half hour away from me. And, you know, it's in a volleyball building. So it's, you know, 1,000 seats. And you know, it was a fairly tepid reaction for most of the talent, not like Full Sail. It was, you know, slightly more casual crowd. And then Rude comes out and the place exploded. Everybody's saying glorious because it's fun, you know? So they had to turn him face. So if you're going to do it, treat him like one. Don't have him sitting. Dolph. What are we going to do with Dolph, man? What are we going to do with Dolph? And then, right, he wins the match by, you know, they wanted to be like, well, he beat Dolph at his own game. But what it does to the audience is it says, well, he won cheaply. Rude can't beat Dolph with his finisher. I don't need to pay attention to this guy. And then he gets laid out right afterwards, which means we have to see this again down the line somewhere. And what it does is it cements Rude as someone you don't need to care that much about. And I think that's a huge, huge mistake. But again, if this ends up with Rude turning back into a heel, which again, you guys said it might, I think you might be right. Maybe that's the way this was meant to go. But I thought this was a failure in execution and in planning. Some of the stuff that they did last night was planned all right and then executed poorly, like the WWE title match. This to me was a failure across the board. It was the only true failure on the show.
Not only that, but the match placement is another thing, because at this point, you know, the only thing you got left after this is the main event. So how many people really care or are invested in it, because they're just waiting for it to be over before they can get to the main event. And I am pretty much done with Dolph Ziggler. He may be a talented wrestler and whatever he wants to say. And when he was thinking about quitting, you know, leaving the Fed when his contract was up to go do comedy full time, I was like, nah, I hope he resigns. Nah, I wish he hadn't. And I hope when his next contract goes up, he decides to be bad at comedy full time and get off WWE TV. And you know what? He can make some money on the indies.
He would inevitably join the Bullet Club in 6 months and annoy the hell out of me. But he would make good money.
Yes. So, by all means, Bullet Club, Ring of Honor, they all can have him. Heck, he can even go to Impact Wrestling if it still exists by then.
I think he would be at least as big a star as Cody Rhodes on the indies. Yeah, you're right. They can have him.
Rude. I want the very best for Rude, and if you keep working with people that's unmotivated like Ziggler, it's not gonna be a pretty sight. But I remember when they tweeted the finish to me. There was kind of like Rude had to cheat to win, and I was just ready to go on a rant in my review. I was so ready. I was so hot. I was so upset as a face having to cheat to win. But after I actually seen what happened, I still was over it and wasn't pleased, but it kind of made more sense, especially knowing Rude, you know, that teetering. But I wanted Rude to win clean, you know, if anything. But, you know, it seems like this isn't over, which is frustrating. It was my least favorite match of the entire night, maybe the year. Like, and it's kind of like when you see something like this on paper, on card, you would think that it would be more enjoyable. But this is what we got. Sad.
What a sour note to end on. God,
right?
We're sitting here like, oh, you know, this card had an all time great match on it, kick ass Hell in a Cell match with Shane and Kevin, the triple threat. You know, I know we're sitting here being all sad that Bobby Roode was rolled out poorly.
I know. I wish we didn't even talk about this match, to be honest. Yeah.
there was a chance I wouldn't have even brought it up, except for, you know, the segue.
The Rude.
Last thing, though. Did either of you see the pre-show? Because I did not.
I saw most of it. It was actually a good match. It was a good tag match. They're doing some Hype Bros breakup, which, you know, it is what it is. I like Mojo. But Gable and Benjamin, it was mostly told me that, you know, if Gable and Benjamin do get the shot against the Usos, that's a match that's worth getting really hyped up for. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I didn't see the pre-show, but I'm pretty sure Gable and Benjamin, I'm pretty sure they did great, though.
They need to come up with, like, a fun playoff? Like, what if they're the world's latest tag team? Because they're the most recent one to form. I'm just spitballing here.
I'm sure they'll come up with something fun. I'm just glad that Gable got an upgrade in a tag partner.
What is it with you and hating on Jason Jordan, man?
That's for another show. So we'll wait for that next Raw pay-per-view when Jason Jordan is leading Team Angle at Survivor Series. So that's Hell in a Cell. Before we look at TLC real quick, give me your final grade.
I'm going to have to revise the grade from my last show too, Patrick, if you'll bear with me. 2 weeks ago, I gave New Mercy an A-, doing it right after the show. I would like to revise that down to a B+, because I thought that the Braun Strowman-Brock Lesnar main event was a poor match. I thought it was okay at the time. With 2 weeks of hindsight, it was bad. It was a failure. So I'm going to pull back my A- for No Mercy and drop it to a B+, and I'm going to drop an A- on Hell in a Cell. And here's why. Was there some filler and some disappointment on this? Yes. We talked about Rude Ziggler. We talked a lot about Jinder and Shinsuke Nakamura. And yeah, that was but that wasn't a disappointment. That was just what we expected. But there was so much on this card that exceeded expectations. Orton and Rusev working a really strong match. Charlotte and Natalya running a good angle to move that story forward. The U.S. title match getting bumped up to a triple threat and them having a legitimate 4-star match going 20 minutes in the mid-card. And then the most important thing, here's what it comes down to for me. You have a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell. The two Hell in a Cell matches were both great. Not just good. Like, they're usually good. They were great. And that to me is what locks this in as an A-. It's a minus because there was some stuff that was regrettable, particularly the WWE title match. But the other really important stuff knocked it out of the park. Usos New Day, seriously, if you haven't seen it, if you don't watch anything else from the show, if you don't want to sit through a 39-minute Shane McMahon match, I understand. I think you're wrong, but I understand. Go watch Usos New Day. It was unbelievable. Let's have a shout-out for that whole feud. All five of their big matches have been so good, and this was the best one yet. Keep them coming, WWE. I'll keep watching them. A-.
Yo, on my end, I'm definitely going to give it a B+. B plus on my end. I feel like this was a nice show. One of the better ones of the year, to be honest. So two Hell in a Cell matches, you can't beat that. The triple threat matchup and the Rusev Orton was solid. Charlotte and Natalya was even solid. You know, B+. It was good.
This was actually my when I was looking at it. This would be my third favorite pay-per-view of the year, main roster pay-per-view of the year, behind Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Their smaller shows in the spring really weren't all that good, in terms of, main events delivering and having really good big matches on them. Royal Rumble and WrestleMania are the top two, but this was right there. And I'd probably put No Mercy fourth. So kudos to the SmackDown people. I totally had no expectations other than the tag match. I had no expectations for this, and they gave me a very pleasant surprise. And I'm looking forward to seeing SmackDown. And that's the goal of any good pay per view, right? Get you to the next cycle. So yeah, I'm in.
Absolutely. Now I would have given this show an A-, but I'm grading it on a curve. I'm basing my grade simply on time spent that I enjoyed versus the time I didn't. So with that, I will give it an A, because more of the time was great and fun versus the time spent not really enjoying it. And you got to give the two Hell in a Cell matches kudos, because alone those two were what, an hour and 3 minutes. So took a chunk of the show. So that's where I'm going, an A for the show. And now we have to look forward to, in less than 2 weeks, TLC, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs on the award-winning WWE Network. of course, to Evan's pure joy, Christmas has come early. The Shield is back, and in a 4-on-3 handicap match, in a tables, ladders, and chairs match, The Shield versus Braun Strowman, Miz, and The Bar. No, and Shane. Yeah, yes, that's, I'm right. Alexa Bliss versus Mickie James in a women's championship match. And Asuka makes her debut versus Emma.
We're going to have to hear you gloat about an Alexa Bliss clean win, aren't we? Ugh.
You were looking forward to gloating on audio that Asuka was going to destroy the greatness that is Alexa Bliss. But, buddy, you're going to have to wait a little longer.
It's coming. It is coming. It's on its way. The Shield is back, man. I'm so pumped. I'm not convinced that it is going to end up being a 4-on-3 match. I don't know that Cesaro is cleared to work after what happened to him at No Mercy. So I think Braun being added might be, you know, their way to them. Maybe they'll write off Cesaro somehow, or The Miz might chicken out in some fashion. We still have another Raw to go. And then my other thought was, you know, if this is 4-on-3, so be it. It's awesome. Cesaro and Sheamus are essentially one character anyway, so it kind of works from that standpoint. But just how cool to see the Shield back together. And they're going to wrestle, you know, back together in a TLC match, same way they debuted. Think of the spots, the ridiculousness that we are going to get. It's a totally a one match show. I mean, there's this, you know, the Sister Abigail stuff with Bray Wyatt. Oh, good Lord. But you know what? We're showing up for the big TLC match. They're going to show all out. And yeah, I'm all in.
Excited for it.
Can't wait for that. Minneapolis, Minnesota is not worthy, but they're getting it. They're getting their return of the Shield. Their first match together again. It's going to be wonderful. I can't wait. But with that, it's time to wrap it up. So before we do go, Jeffrey, tell people where they can find you.
Oh, yeah. You can find me on all social media, anything, at Jeffrey Show Live. It's J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, even the website. Just put a .com behind it.
Everybody can find Evan on Twitter at Evan L. Weston. And you can find me on Twitter at YellowmanPA and at FOW Radio. I hope you enjoyed the review. We'll be back in less than 2 weeks for TLC. Goodbye. Good night. We're out of here.